Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hello and welcome to this podcast of the Lotus Eaters for the 15th of April 2022. I'm joined by Leo.
Hello!
And today we're going to be talking about The Establishment Strikes Back against Elon Musk, the family sex show that's being set up in Bristol, age 5 plus, is my understanding. And also, Rwanda is my new best friend, or our best friend, in the United Kingdom. It certainly is. I'm looking forward to that one especially, I'll be honest.
I'm old enough to remember when asylum seekers came from Rwanda instead
not,
of...
Not anymore.
They went to Rwanda.
Definitely going to Rwanda, 100% of them.
Yeah. I mean, they're seeking asylum from horrific conditions in France.
It's unbearable. I will give them that.
Yeah.
Living with the frogs. But otherwise, we shall start the news. So, that we don't do the announcements anymore. Just to let you know.
All right.
Sure. You're confused. But anyway, let's start off. So, the establishment is striking back, or at least has struck back, against Elon Musk to some degree. As people may remember, and just to kick off, this is about the fact that he decided to be like, I'm just going to buy all of Twitter and clear him out. I was like, yeah, if I had that much money, that's probably what I'd do too.
Yeah.
How do you fight back against the left? Well, I have all this cash.
Well, yeah, because the left, for years, the left were saying, oh, you're not happy with being cancelled, with, you know, being arbitrarily dismissed from Twitter, like Trump and so many people have been kicked off Twitter. Well, it's a private company. You're free to start your own private company.
Ew.
It's like, yeah, or there's another option where we buy that private company.
Well, actually, it's a public company. It's publicly traded, and we can buy it all and then privatize it as well. But anyway, I'm just going to start off with this premium video that we did a while back. You can see between John and Carl here on the politics of the Hunger Games, because I think it has some striking similarities, or at least in the power structures as we can see them in the response to Elon here. So we'll move forward. If we go to the next one, this is the SEC filing that Elon made, and we didn't have time to read it yesterday, but I thought we'd go through the end of it, right at the bottom, where he has some notes that he sent to the Twitter guys, which I just found funny. So he starts off by saying, as I indicated this weekend, I believe that the company should be private to go through the changes that we need to be made. After the past several days of thinking this over, I have decided I want to acquire the company and take it private. I'm going to send you an offer letter tonight. It will be public in the morning. Are you available to chat? I just love how he's sort of friendly about this. Like, yeah, I'm buying the company. Hello. Friendly guy. Number one, best and final. Point A, I am not playing the back and forth game. Mm-hmm. This is after they tried to, well, put him in a trap and he was like, no. B, I have moved straight to the end. It's a high price for your shareholders. They will love it. If the deal doesn't work, given that I don't have confidence in the management, nor do I believe that they can necessarily change the public market, I would need to reconsider my position as a shareholder. This is not a threat. It's simply a good investment without the changes that need to be made. And those changes won't happen without taking the company private.
Mm.
Blah, blah, blah. Call me if you want. Bye. I just love how it's so politely put there to them, where it's just obviously hostile, but at the same time, just...
Well, he gets straight to the point. Mm. And he's absolutely right. And also, you know, shareholders, if you've invested in Twitter, most of them will be investing to make money rather than, you know, for some sort of ideological mission.
Well, you'd think in a normal stock market
situation. A lot of shareholders come out and like said, oh, this is terrible that we're making money.
Well, they're not happy about the idea of making money. Elon Musk has offered them money and they're like, well, I don't want that. We're planning on that.
What's happened to capitalism?
We will show. But he gave a TED talk recently and he actually gave some concrete examples of what he would do with Twitter as well. Like, he genuinely wants to reform the place to actually be useful for once. And one of the examples he gives is any deranking that the company makes to any account should be public.
Mm.
Like, you should be able to look up what kind of deranking is taking place on your account or anyone else's account, if it's algorithmically or manually done.
This is what people have been arguing for years. Make all the decisions, all this this opaque, you know, black box controlled by, you know, really biased billionaire oligarchs with agendas, all these green hairs with septum piercings at Twitter. They make all these decisions about who gets boosted, who gets shadow banned, but none of it's clear. None of it's following any sort of
rules that are repeated and applied fairly. It's all very arbitrary. So if we open up, that's going to provide scrutiny and going to vastly improve. Like when we open up, you know, any public service or, you know, any when a company has an AGM, like when you open up the
some actual transparency for once.
Transparency is is key.
That is his one demand, as in like the one concrete demand he's been able to make of how I would reform it, and that's just an obviously good one for everyone involved, except the leftists who want to keep this all a secret.
Yeah.
He also went on in the TED talk to say that the future of civilization depends on an open public square. Quote, I don't care about the economics at all. Just don't care. I'm going to lose money. Don't give a toss. And this is the thing that a lot of people have been saying, well, oh, isn't it ridiculous that he says he doesn't care and therefore is going to trash the company? No one cares about the economics. Mm. Zero people in the room care about the economics of Twitter.com. Most of all, the people invested in Twitter.com before Elon came along as well. Because as we can see here, this is the response to Elon buying all his shares. Vanguard, one of the other major corporations, or let's say, I don't know, trust funds or whatever the hell they're called, I can't remember, have decided to up their stakes. So if you click on that, John, they've now decided to buy so many more Twitter shares. They're now even bigger than Elon Musk. As you can see, number one now with 10.29%. So they just decided to buy more. Why? Because they want to fight against Elon Musk. It's clear. If we go to the next one, we can see more of this. And the point I'm making the point here, if you see Vanguard and BlackRock leverage their Twitter shares to engage in anti-Elon activism, then you know that the threat to the regime is real. And as I mentioned, it's not just them. Everyone else seems to be increasing their shares as well to try and stop Elon from taking over the company. Why is that? He's offering you money. You could make lots of money. Yeah. The company isn't worth $54 a share. And he's offering you that huge piles of billions and billions of dollars. Mm. None of them want it. None of them care about the cash. They care about the control, which tells you everything you need to know.
Mm.
That these organizations, the people who run them, are not investing because they want to make cash. They're investing because they want power over the public discourse directly in the form of Twitter.com, owning the platform, owning what MPs can see. Because, well, they're all on there. If you go to the next one, we're going to see some other stuff about this. Someone making the point. So let me get this straight. The progressive left is now rooting for Saudi Arabia, Wall Street, Vanguard / BlackRock against free speech, liberty, and the dude who makes electric cars and is going to Mars. What? Shouldn't be a surprise, really. Frankly. I mean, Elon Musk is so much a guy outside of the cathedral, clearly. I mean, he's a guy who's pro-freedom, pro-liberty, as this chap says.
Classic liberal values. Not the modern, woke liberal values.
Nothing to do with the socialists. Yeah. Has no engagement with these people. This African-American, who has gone through so much trials and tribulations, is now the richest African-American on planet Earth. Yeah, they don't like him. I wonder why. It's because the regime is made up of the most cynical, evil people on the planet, by the looks of it. And if we go forward, we could see one of these people, which is Saudi Prince Al-Wahid bin Talud Al Saud. Very short name. One of Twitter's largest shareholders rejects Elon Musk's bid. He's not going to engage in it. He also doesn't want money.
Nice of him to take some time away from ordering strikes, missile strikes on Yemeni civilians.
Yeah, just another funeral went by clear today. He didn't get to blow it up. But also just, again, another individual who hates the smell of money. Just doesn't want more of it. Can't stand it.
He's got enough.
Yeah. We'll go to the next one. We can see Al-Wahid's decision-making here. He decides to argue that it's worth more than $54 a share. It's obviously not. He also decides to buy...
If it was, it would be valued at more than that on the market. That's how markets work.
Yeah, and no, it's not. And also, his response was to buy more shares. Again, trying to stop Elon Musk take up as much as they can to try and keep him out of power, as in, well, being able to bring liberty to the public square here. And if we get to the next one, we can see Elon Musk's response to Al-Wahid, which is hilarious. Interesting. Just two questions, if I may. How much of Twitter does the kingdom own directly and indirectly? And what is the kingdom's views on journalistic freedom of speech? Like, should he be taking no input from Saudi princes on how the public square should be run? I mean, their input is usually chop chop, and that's about it. So, yeah, as you can see, 200,000 likes there because, well, the entire Liberty faction that's left on Twitter.com is still standing behind Elon this, rightfully. If you go to the next one, we could also see Elon Musk's definition of free speech, which was fantastic. I mean, it goes to show that a man has thought about this. He decided to say, is someone you don't like allowed to say something you don't like? If that's the case, then we have free speech. It's the right for the person you don't like to say something you don't like.
Yeah.
What is this? Noam Chomsky's definition used to use back in the day. Noam Chomsky?
Yep.
Far right winger? No. Absolutely not. If we go to the next one, we can also see a funny case of this, because you remember the prince saying that it was undervalued. It was actually worth more than $54.
Mm.
It's not trading price.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense. So apparently, Goldman Sachs were called in by Twitter to evaluate the price to try and argue that it was undervalued by Elon, and it was totally worth a bajillion dollars a share, or whatever fake number they wanted. However, people also caught that Goldman Sachs had already told their investors how much it was worth, which, as you can see there, 30 buckaroos. It's not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
They were literally saying it's actually not even worth, you know, a fraction of what Elon's offering there. It's much less than compared to what Elon's offering. So you can see, again, the reason they're upping their share prices is not to make money.
Yeah.
They all know it's not worth
what
Elon's offering. They're here to keep control. If we go to the next one as well, we can also see, I went to Wall Street Bets to go and check out what they're up to, because of course they're big fans as well. I love this one that they posted there. So you can see Business Insider saying, billionaire Jeff Bezos, Washington Post, marks a fascinating cultural transition in America, because Bezos just decided to buy the Washington Post. And that's fine.
Yeah.
That's okay.
He's got the right politics, the right opinions. They've been approved.
If a billionaire wants to just buy a corporation and control their complete output, that's all fine. Unless it's Elon Musk.
Yeah.
Then it's evil and bad. Elon Musk's attempts to buy Twitter represents a chilling new threat. Billionaire trolls taking over social media.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is bad and evil, I'm sure, but the reverse is absolutely fine. If you go to the next one, you can also see the, of course, the Washington Post, the outlet that Jeff Bezos owns, is very mad. And they decided to write this. Musk's appointment to Twitter's board shows that we need regulation of social media platforms to prevent rich people from controlling our channels of communication. Brought to you by Jeff Bezos, TMC.
And there are very few newspapers that aren't controlled, and social media platforms that aren't controlled by billionaires.
Yeah.
The Guardian. The Guardian say, oh, we're free from any influence from any rich people. It's like, what about Bill Gates?
When are you giving that money back?
Yeah.
I mean, what was it? I can't remember the amount. It was millions and millions of dollars.
Oh, yeah. It was well into seven figures, I think. I mean, eight figures.
But there you have it. So there's the correct billionaires who are arguing that billionaires should not be in charge of the media or means of communication, because that would be bad when it's Elon, but not us.
Yeah.
And what's the difference between us and Elon? Well, Elon wants free speech.
Yeah.
Elon wants the marketplace of ideas.
Mm.
I mean, I don't really know if he has a real grounded ideological position on much stuff. He seems more like a pragmatist
in
most regards. So I really genuinely think he just wants a marketplace where people can have the fight.
Yeah.
And we'll see what comes of it. Anyway, if we go to the next one, we can also see the fact that Elon's not disturbed by these shifts. He also decided to say that he does have a plan B if Twitter rejects his offer. He won't say what it is yet. Probably the right thing to do, of course. Although the questions have obviously been raised that if he just decides to sell all his shares and plummet the stock price even further.
Yeah.
It's like, sure, you guys keep control, but you've now lost loads of money.
Yeah.
So, I mean, either way, I win.
And then Twitter are even more vulnerable to, you know, attempt a hostile takeover.
I hope so. I'd love to see it, but if not, well, they're just going to go bankrupt in irrelevancy as they're moving that way already. But that's the story, as in, like, the news part. The best part of all of this has to be the left-wing response, because it's been magical. I don't know how much you've seen, but holy crap, the verified checkmarks lost their goddamn minds. Have some responses here. Elon Musk is why to abolish billionaires. Asking them to chip in their fair share isn't enough. Regulating them isn't enough. When people are allowed to acquire this much concentrated influence, they will inevitably manspread economic power into every other form of power.
What?
Well, I love how it's already owned by billionaires.
Yeah.
I mean, sorry, I forgot that Vanguard and BlackRock were mom and pop stores run by people on...
I mean, like, yeah, well, on a serious note, I mean, Mohammed bin Salman, whatever he's called, the Saudi Arabian prince, premier, leader... he's a dictator who makes all his money from fossil fuels, whereas Elon Musk is...
He's a struggling worker in the commune.
Man, he's generated so much wealth for people. He's not just taking resources out of the ground and selling them. He's creating business, and he's creating business that actually helps the planet. It's electric cars. It's what we're supposed to be supporting, if you follow what the woke left say. So why is he the enemy and Mohammed bin Salman is...
He's friend. Friend-enemy distinction here.
The guy who kills... He killed that... he killed Khashoggi.
I don't know if this particular prince did.
Oh, right.
But
one of them did.
Either way, he's a member of the kingdom's family. And,
yeah.
Well, look, there's not much of a distinction there, so it's a fair point to make. But it's just that... Well, look, the Progressive Cathedral has been up for buying on the stock market forever.
Yeah.
And you've all been fine with this.
Yeah.
And billionaires have all been trading it, and you've all been fine with that. Why is that? And all of a sudden, this billionaire you're upset about. Well, it's because, well, they're all part of the cathedral. They're all part of the established order, which is happy to censor as much as possible because it keeps their position as firm as possible. I mean, as soon as Elon comes along and starts mining into that concrete
that
you've created, then you're upset because it may actually change things for the better for once.
Yeah.
If we move to the next one, we can see more of this madness. As you can see, Addy Noe collected quite a few here. I suppose if you can click on the images, then we'll have some joy with this. Verify checkmark, who cares who he is? Today on Twitter feels like the last evening in a Berlin nightclub at the twilight of Weimar Germany. Because, you know, free speech is when Nazi Germany... And when Nazi Germany, that's free speech. That's when we arrive at true freedom, according to Jeff here. Rightio! Let's move to the next one. Next image. You can see some guy here saying, Elon Musk buying Twitter is the end of the world, basically. He'll amplify every extremist right-wing Nazi he can find.
What? Is this guy about, like, is this guy aware of what Elon Musk is about? I've never heard Elon Musk espouse or support any kind of, like, extremist far-right view.
No, I mean, the most political he's ever got is, haha, 420.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, sure, why not? Again, a liberty-focused view, not a Nazi-focused view.
Yeah.
Kind, the liberal Nazis weren't a thing. It's not real. If we go to the next image, we can see more of this. Here we go. Elon Musk targets Twitter with $41 billion cash takeover offer. This could mean the end of content moderation and on the platform, discrediting into disinformation and far-right extremism. So we're gonna descend into far-right extremism and disinformation. Why? Because people are allowed to speak.
I mean, he says this could, but it could also mean that everybody gets a free can of Coke. I mean, it could mean anything. It's an absolute nonsense to speculate. I mean, obviously it wouldn't. What it's going to mean is content moderation that follows rules, follows processes that are known, that are transparent, that are clear. And in content moderation that you can see the
what's actually going process, on.
Yeah, you can see it happening in front of you.
But I also love the idea that Twitter is not a place of disinformation and far-left extremism. So I'm sorry, but like you have literal terrorists boasting themselves on your platform constantly.
Yeah.
Not just the Taliban. But I mean, let's not get into that for a minute.
But they're woke left approved terrorists.
Yeah.
So, you know, Islamic extremists and, you know, dictators. And
or Antifa.
Things like that. Yeah, Antifa. That's
killed
fine.
Someone in Portland this week. But well, not, here's an interview.
Yeah, you can't have democratically elected leaders of the free world.
No. I also, just the disinformation point, I mean, that's something to really keep in mind here, because we've covered a lot the Hunter Biden laptop story and the fact that was censored by Twitter, for example, so a lot of people couldn't see it. And, well, if Elon Musk is in charge of Twitter and that decision comes to his desk, what's Elon going to do? Not going to censor it. He's going to be like, well, look, let people talk about it.
Yeah. And also...
That wouldn't be allowed currently.
He won't be...
It wasn't.
He won't be the god of Twitter. He'll set up processes that will be followed. So it won't be somebody's opinion if something should be cancelled. It'll be the process, which is, you know, that's how...
Which he'll have influence over. But
that's like a criminal justice system. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, you're following rules. You're following precedent. You're following explicit laws that are defined and limited and transparent.
And they'll actually be fair for once instead of slanted. Because the New York Times Hunter Biden laptop story is probably the best example of just, well, you censored that and called it Russian espionage. It just wasn't.
Yeah. Like,
that was actual disinformation that you all perpetrated. From the director at the top of Twitter and Facebook, who just censored the story. Well, that can't happen again if you have someone like Elon in charge, which would be good. And if we go to the next one here, we can see some more examples. Elon Musk is Donald Trump with money. Newsflash, Donald Trump also has money. Oh no, I can't have fun.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Let's go to the next one, because I saw Count Dankula's response, which was hilarious. New, don't let people I don't like speak. That might start to agree with them. New, this is just like Nazi Germany. New, how can people debate things? Basically Nazism. Remember Nazi Germany? Famous for its culture of debates.
Yeah, plurality of opinion.
If we go to the next view, we'll have some enjoyment out of these as well. Some guy being like, please no. He signs it off here, the funniest part. Yours truly, a lifelong verified Twitter user. Don't you know I'm verified? Don't you know I'm a Twitter aristocrat? I've worked with you for so long. Shut up, rando. No one cares. Let's go to the next one, because I love this account as well. Someone here, I love you all, but I'm 100% out if Musk takes over Twitter. Bye.
Nice. Cool.
No one cares.
Go to Getter.
Yes.
Go to Parler.
I let everyone on. Don't worry. They're not a censorious platform like Twitter. Go to the next one. We'll get some more of these. Some guy being like, I am frightened of the impact on society and politics if Elon Musk acquires Twitter. He seems to believe that social media, anything goes. For democracy to survive, we need more content moderation, not less.
What? So for democracy to survive, we need less democracy.
We need more censorship, and that's how you get more democracy.
Right.
So the more things you censor, the more democratic everything is.
Right.
That makes sense.
The only way we can be free is if we're not free.
Yes.
Right.
Perfect take. We'll move on. We'll go to the next one here. Some other checkmark. If Elon Musk successfully purchases Twitter, it was in World War III. Perfectly sane people.
And
absolutely
the destruction of our planet.
The whole world's going to end. Why? Some people will be able to say words. Oh no. If we move forward, we can go to a failed game dev who had something to say as well. Brianna Wu here, who decided to come out with Gab, etc. failed because smart people don't want to spend our time on those platforms. Dude, Twitter's already failing. Like, it's already not profitable.
Yeah.
Like, it's already not worth having if you're actually an investor looking to make money, of course. Well, then it's not a successful platform, whereas the other ones actually are in that regard. They're still growing. Twitter is shrinking every year. So that doesn't even make any sense. But again, Brianna Wu, famous smart person, failed game dev, and, well, whore. Let's go to the next one so we can see Elon Musk also saying, in response to this, taking Twitter private at $54, should this be up to the shareholders, not the board? And people being like, well, obviously. And it's a good question, which is the fact of, well, the board should be doing things in the interest of the shareholders.
Yeah.
And if you're offering the shareholders money, well, seems like a pretty good argument for what would be in their interests. Cash money. I don't know if you hate money. Maybe the shareholders hate money. I assume that's what the board's thinking, like the rest of them. Cernovich here making a good point as well. Why is Saudi Arabia so obsessed with blocking the deal? And why is the regime media covering this up? Very good question, as Elon says. If we move forward, we can also see Twitter's valuation over time, as Binary Surfer has here, which is just to make the point that it's a fair deal. It's more than fair. The red line being what Elon's offering there.
Yeah.
If you go to the next one, we can also see the fact apparently the shares have now tumbled a bit after the Saudis tried to block the whole thing. Again, why are we letting ourselves be held hostage by Saudis? I mean, some of the most evil people on the planet. I mean, next to the Kims, maybe. And if we move to the last one here, this is the most revealing thing, which is the Biden administration have got involved. Why? To try and shut down the unfair practices? No, no, no. Elon Musk is the bad guy, of course. As Elon Musk offers to buy the rest of Twitter, a legal source tells Fox Business, SEC government, and the Justice Department have launched what he described as a joint investigation into a myriad of Musk's regulatory issues, primarily involving Tesla. How convenient. Well, perfect timing.
So they're hammering Musk with all the... This is what dictators do, like Putin, people like that, you know, order investigations into business, like the Chinese Communist Party clamping down on their tech sector with Jack Ma, who, you know, started Alibaba, one of the, you know, most profitable businesses in the world. So they, you know, they have these sort of... and obviously, you know, they have overbearing scrutiny on people they want to silence. So the Chinese Communist Party wanted to silence Jack Ma. They did the exact same thing.
Yeah.
It's worrying that in the free world, in the West, this is happening.
There,
you know, and this is obviously because, you know, Twitter, obviously, you know, with the silencing of valid stories like the Hunter Biden laptop story, smearing it as fake news.
They're obviously part of the Biden regime.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
just directly in that case, if nothing else.
It's the tech wing of the Democrat Party.
Yeah, I mean, just it's undeniable at this point. And as you can see, just all of a sudden, the SEC and the Justice Department are like, oh, we're going to investigate Elon Musk. Convenient. I mean, as you say, the CCP or Putin would engage in a purge of people within that party by doing exactly this.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, no, you're corrupt.
Yeah.
We found out.
So Berezovsky or Navalny or whoever Putin is going after, they always get, you know, they get sent to jail on... you know, tax fraud, regulatory
corruption charges.
You know, it's never done on a charge of like, oh, you spoke out against me.
It's always done on something else to cover it up. But anyway, that's the how convenient moment there. But it really does establish one thing, which is that Elon Musk has, well, even if he loses this and leaves with selling all his shares, where he takes the price down and screws them over that way. But if nothing else, he has shone a light on how the system is really run more than any single individual ever could.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, hats off and salutes in the chat to him for that, if nothing else.
Yeah.
I mean, being able to expose that, these are the people that run the country.
Yeah.
This is how they all organize themselves.
Yeah.
And they will lose as much money as possible to remain at their control.
Yeah. And this is how they respond when you try and...
Tip the apple cart.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Let's move to the family sex show.
The family sex show. So,
I'm not looking forward to this.
So this is a show, according to their own website, it's a show for families about sex and relationships. A fun and silly performance about the painfully awkward subject of sex, exploring names and functions, boundaries, consent, pleasure, queerness, sex, gender, and relationships. Using real-life bodies, personal stories, songs, and movement, the family sex show... I don't know what sort of movement that would be. Oh. In and out. The family sex show puts the good stuff at the forefront of conversation and it imagines a future where there is no shame, but a celebration of difference, equality, and liberation.
I don't want that future. I want shame.
Yeah. I think shame is a very underrated emotion. Everybody's trying to eliminate shame, eliminate anxiety. No, we need some shame.
Yeah.
There's some things you should be ashamed of.
I mean, I love the best example is at Pride events where you get people in the dog costumes and the police holding them on leashes and you just think, I want kink shaming. I definitely want kink shaming in this situation, if nothing else.
Yeah.
Do that at home. I don't care. Very liberal.
Yeah.
You wish in your own
home. Go nuts at home. Go nuts at home. But like, yeah, just not in front of the kids. But this family sex show was put on by This Egg. So they invite you to bring your parents, bring your children, friends, lovers, bring your whole self. Made in consultation with the School of Sexuality Education. This is a show for everyone. Knowing your body means knowing your rights. It's a show. Guess what age this show? So this contains stuff about. It's all about sex, queerness, gender. You know, all this sort of ideological stuff, and you know, fairly adult stuff. You know, sex is usually considered an adult thing. That's why pornography is for 18 plus. Guess what age there? And there's nakedness in this show as well.
You said real bodies. I saw they say bring your children.
Yeah.
They have an age limit?
They do. It's 5.
Oh, thanks for that.
So you can't bring a 4-year-old because that would be inappropriate. You know what I mean?
That would be shameful. But a 5-year-old, that would be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Why are they age? Why are they being discriminatory against 4-year-olds? I don't understand. It's very problematic. So in looking at the FAQs, so they've got... this thing that answers questions, which does absolutely nothing to reassure me. So their plan is
I love that. They have most asked questions. Why are you making this?
Yeah.
It's a good question.
So it's to create an alternative offline honest and human theatre show that is offering intersectional, feminist, non-binary, anti-racist and sex-positive take on relationships and sex education. Oh my God, can you cram any more just nonsensical woke words in there? And this, I mean, it's grooming. It's putting the idea in children's minds. No 5-year-old, you know, goes to their dad. Oh, Dad, I think I'm a non-binary, genderqueer, transgender, pansexual, whatever.
Man, I want to go to the sex show, Dad.
Yeah. Any, like, 5-year-old, like, that comes... No 5-year-old comes up with this stuff. It's all put in their head by adults.
At least we know who's behind the grooming when they literally say, yes, we're intersectional, feminist, non-binary, anti-racist.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's the leftists.
So, and to 5-year-olds, they're going to be like, you know, they're putting these ideas in their head. And, like, and that's why all these woke leftists, like, you know, all these Hollywood stars have all got transgender kids because they've put this idea in their heads. Like, just let people grow up. And if they want to transition, absolutely fine. Absolutely fine. Once they know what's going on and what's what. Like, when you're a child and when you hit puberty, there's all these, you know, changes going on. It's ridiculous. When I was a kid, I desperately wanted to be a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle. Because I'd seen a show called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I watched it every week or every day, however often it was on. I loved it. Oh my God, I had the figures. I loved it. I loved it so much.
A ninja plasty?
No, I didn't. I didn't have a turtle shell irremovably grafted to my back that had lifelong impacts on my fertility.
Why did the NHS not do this? This is unbearable.
I know, but I think, you know, looking back, maybe that was a good idea. Maybe I grew out of the turtle phase. You know what I mean? Like, and you know, this is the thing, man. Like, I wanted to be a turtle because I'd been exposed to a show about turtles. If I'd been shown a show about, I don't know, talking like gerbils or steam trains or something, I'd be like, oh, I want to be a gerbil. You know what I mean? I
want to be a train.
It's like, and then you grow up, you're like, wait, I don't want to be a turtle, actually. You know what I mean? I'm a person. That was just, I was a kid. Like, so just, you know, just leave it for people who are, like, not 5-year-olds. Wait until they're 6. Wait until they're 6. You know what I mean?
That's right, I'm a conservative.
6-year-old, yeah, get your bollocks out in front of them, around explaining, you know, what felching is, but not when they're 5.
Get that away is, from the that kiddos. Is too much.
So they say, why is it for families and not for schools? And this is the response to why is it for families and not for schools. There are a few difficulties with making the family sex show a school's performance. Yeah, I think schools are generally against naked, sexualized performances in front of children. You know what I mean? For pretty obvious reasons. You know what I mean? They're like, oh, it's not in the syllabus. Oh, no, you don't say. We don't have grooming of children in the syllabus. Well, that's, you know, it's good to see, like, not all of my tax dollars have been spent on grooming children. This is all funded by taxpayer money, by the way. They say, why so young? 5 is young. And their response is, sexual development and behavior in children starts from birth. It absolutely does not.
What?
It absolutely, fundamentally does not.
Right, that's a nonce.
I mean, that
I'm sorry,
is, yeah. That,
but anyone who thinks a one-year-old is engaging in sexual development is a nonce.
Yeah. Yeah, a hardcore nonce. So they say it's important that children are supported in their exploratory development safely and comfortably, which I disagree with. I think, you know, when you're growing up, you develop yourself and it's better. I don't want my mum, you know, next to me, like, showing me how to tickle my balls. Like, that's just, do it yourself. You don't want it. Like, why you gotta bring adults into it?
Mom, I got
you
know a computer. I'll just Google it. Don't worry.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And they actually link to, we don't need to follow this link to the NSPCC, but they say, you can see the common stages of sexual development laid out by the NSPCC here.
Right. If the NSPCC thinks that one-year-olds are sexual beings, I've got some worries about them too.
Well, the good thing is the NSPCC absolutely don't think that one-year-olds are sexual beings. Yeah, so when they're talking about children, they say it's uncommon for younger children to discuss specific sexual acts, use explicit sexual language, or have adult-like sexual contact with other people. So, I mean, that's obviously just common sense. But the NSPCC, they're trying to, like, you know, say, oh, but this is what the NSPCC say, thinking nobody will click on the link. No, the NSPCC explicitly say, you know, young people. And actually, it's a red flag. If a young child is talking about sex, that's a sign, you know, potentially they've been abused. They're a victim. Or maybe they've seen the family sex show. They have a FAQ about porn. They say, we can't, and no one else can, no matter what locks you put in your devices, control how or when young people get access to porn. It's normally as fast as the fastest in the class. Listen, you got your kids with you till they go to, like, till they go to school. Man, five-year-olds don't have phones. Like, what are you doing? And also, you can put locks in your phones, like, when they go to school, the phone goes in the locker. They don't have their phone with them in class.
Parental locks.
And, like, people are like, oh, but they'll have burner phones. Like, five-year-olds don't have burner phones. What, your five-year-old kid is selling crystal meth? Like,
no, but, like, the school Wi-Fi, that's age-restricted.
Yeah, the school Wi-Fi generally locks out Pornhub.
Mobile data in this country is, by default, age-restricted.
Yeah.
So unless the parent has gone in and turned that off for them.
Yeah.
No, they can't.
It won't be the parent doing it. It'll be one of these blooming nonces from This Egg Theatre Company. But, there's an FAQ, will people get naked? There is nakedness, yes. At one point in the show, everyone on stage takes their clothes off to the level they feel comfortable to, which for the extra nancy performers is going to be, obviously, like, gaze inside my gaping anus. For some people, that's taking off all their clothes and being completely naked. For other people, that means taking off bottoms but leaving underwear on. For others, it's not taking anything off at all. This moment lasts approximately 5 minutes. But I should imagine it feels like it lasts about a week. No,
please, by the way, please bring your kids.
Yeah.
I am sorry, but this is messed up.
And then they've got a link to resources. And this is the link. Let's just click. It's got, like, massive boners. You can't. This is supposed to be for kids and they've got massive boners.
Look. It's in Bristol, right? I can't remember which county that is. But Wiltshire Police, if you're listening, I know you're investigating more hate crimes this week. I know that's your most important thing that you do.
Oh, yeah.
If you've got
turn up in the rainbow cars.
Got 5 minutes on your hands. Could you maybe give this website an overview and wonder whether or not it's a police matter?
Yeah. Everyone was like, oh, how could Jimmy Savile get away with it in plain sight for so long? Are you mental? We're spending taxpayers' money to send nonces into schools to, like, get naked in front of kids, and you're wondering how Jimmy Savile got away with it. Man, at least Jimmy Savile had the good grace to do his paedophilia in private. And I respect him for that. And he raised a lot of money for charity. He wasn't, you know,
he wasn't 100% invite your kids to my sex show.
Yeah.
I suppose so. The bare minimum. Oh, God.
Jeez.
It's not even funny.
Yeah, the minimum's not the only thing that's bare. And if we move on to the next one, this is them recruiting. So they're looking for collaborators and performers.
Of course, yeah, they're allowed on Twitter. Why not? Yeah, that's fine.
Like we're look, and if you scroll down, it says what sort of performers they want. So it says, yeah, it's being made for a family audience. So we're looking for one cis man, one performer from the global majority, including those with mixed heritage and or who identifies as queer, trans, deaf, disabled, neurodivergent, and is for working class backgrounds.
What?
Why don't you just hire somebody who can do the job, and it doesn't matter if they can. I don't know why they always a global majority. Just at least they've stopped calling them minorities.
Well, no, they've changed it here. This is a debate they're having. It used to be Yukmugamur.
What does that mean?
UK minority ethnic or global heritage minority, and then of course Yukmugamur doesn't sound very human. So they've transferred it to global majority, which still doesn't really sound human.
Yeah,
it also sounds like a threat. Like, they're threatening you with, like, yeah, we're in charge, which is weird. But then also, shouldn't we be trying to help minorities in society, not the majority?
Yeah.
But either way, just say no white men. I'd be less offended, frankly.
Yeah, yeah. Just, we know what you mean. You don't want any straight white men because they're seen as bad these days. And I've literally seen it. I've seen it on Instagram. People having rows between each other and calling each other cisgender, and then they're like, I'm not cisgender, it clearly states in my thing I'm genderqueer.
I'm bisexual, I just never
they've just
men.
Flipped the old playground thing of, you know, you're instead of like, you're gay, now they're saying, you're cisgender.
you're straight. That's a South Park sketch.
You're white, it's disgusting.
Yeah, that's so gay.
If we move on to the next one, of course it gets a nice generous write-up in the Groomer's Almanac, The Guardian. There's a picture. I mean, what did you think they were going to look like? What did you think? That's also a picture of West Midlands Police SWAT team. But what did you think they were going to look like? And they say there was the purple soaked tampon, the classic condom rolled up in it. This is them criticizing previous sex education. The classic condom rolled onto a banana and the general fear-mongering of pictures of STIs pinned up on a board, but never a mention of why you might want to have sex, she says, rolling her eyes. Never anything about empathy or pleasure or how any of it might impact other people. And yeah, I don't think you need to explain to people, like, dawn of time, people have been managing to, like, have sex without any of this nonsense.
But also they're implying that my year six teacher should have sat me down and done literally the meme version of explaining to me what real good sex is like.
Yeah.
Like, no, her job was to tell me about, you know, don't get an STI, Callum.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she did that well.
Yeah, yeah. Have you got any STIs?
No.
Well done.
Year six teacher did her job, wasn't a groomer.
I've had loads, but yeah, and also, like, you know, this idea that people need to be, you know, explained that sex is pleasurable, you work that out on your own. Like, woke people are so conformist, they never imagine that people might work this stuff out on their own. So yeah, the article continues. With a team of eight performers, Dale Jones is making a show about sex and relationships for ages 5 and above. Accompanied by workshops and panel talks, the family sex show tackles topics including boundaries, gender, relationships, and masturbation. The argument against sex education for younger ages has repeatedly been that education is indoctrination. The more we tell our children about sex, the more tempted they will be. The more tempted a 5-year-old will be to have, like, it's a 5-year-olds aren't tempted to this mental. It's all phrased.
Again,
the whole conversation is phrased in the way that children
should be engaging in this.
Should be engaging with it and are aware of it and are informed enough to give consent. And this is a very worrying thing. You're seeing with this, with the transition stuff, they're saying, you know, this 8-year-old wants to transition. It's like, and it's. I mean, for a start, transitioning is something that I don't think an 8-year-old can give an informed consent about. But also, they're saying, this 8-year-old can give consent to be transitioned. So what else can it give consent to? And that's the worrying thing. That's where this discussion around This is the path it's leading down.
I still can't get over how left-wing circles are able, well, publicly able to do this and just not be investigated by the police. And could you imagine this in any other setting that has this sort of criticism? Like, if a Catholic priest came up to your son and was like, let me tell him about how good sex is.
Yeah.
If you were at the scout hut with your five-year-old and he was going into Cubs or whatever it is, and then the scout hut leader was like, hello, let me talk to Billy for a minute.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. You're there to do, like, I don't, can't teachers just focus on teaching, like, don't maths get, don't and get, stuff like that?
Like, if it's going to be about sex, it's usually just don't get pregnant whilst you're 13.
Yeah. Don't get pregnant. Use contraception so you don't get any STDs or have a baby before you want one. The article also says, avoiding conversations about our bodies and how we use them is far more dangerous. Knowing your body is about knowing your rights. And it's not. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights, Article 12, no one shall be subjected to arbitrary interference with his privacy, family, home, or correspondence, nor to attacks upon his honour and reputation. Everyone has the right to the protection of the law against interference or attacks. So they shouldn't be interfering in family life, in private life. You know, this is something for families to do. And like history has shown us, parents are always the best people to raise children, generally.
Because they're the ones who care about them the most.
They're the ones who care about them the most.
There are edge cases, of course, but no one will care about your child more than anyone else.
Yeah.
The best example I have for this is for every bloody book we've done about China and North Korea when they've gone through a famine.
Yeah.
And so the children are carted off to be with cadres. And the cadres, who are not family members, treat children like utter scum and end up getting them all killed.
Yeah.
And it's just like, right, when you take it to its extreme, we can see what's true. The family unit always survives. The families are best for raising their kids.
Yeah. And we're including, like, adoptive parents in that. But we're talking about the family, not, you know, apparatchiks from the state, not theater companies. It's created a framework, a structure where a pedophile could certainly come into this, you know, come into this theater group.
How would you know? How would you know what the difference is?
Yeah, like, because a regular pedophile, like, gets naked in front of children. These ones get naked in front of children as well, so you're not even going to notice any warning signs. You know what I mean?
What would be the difference?
Like, it's created a situation that could be exploited by pedophiles, you know. That's the best case scenario, is it's created a situation that can be exploited by pedophiles. The worst case scenario is they're already doing that. Children aren't anxious about the idea of the show. It's the older people who feel discomfort. Yeah, it's because five-year-olds are innocent. That's why they need to be protected from these ideas. Like, you know, adults feel discomfort because we know it's wrong. Like, it's absolutely nonsense.
I do not believe there are none of the kids in the room being like, I don't want to be here. This is weird.
Yeah. We've got the video. So this is a video. They've taken it down, but managed to get a screen record. And this is them talking about the show. This is the people who do the show. This is what.
Hello, my name's Mike. I'm artistic director at Tobacco Factory Theatres. I use he and him pronouns. I'm a white man with brown hair with grey bits in. And I'm very excited that the Family Sex Show is coming to Bristol. We have presented two productions by the wonderful This Egg in the past. They brought Me and My Bee and Dressed, and both pieces were completely original and very moving in different ways. They make such powerful work that really connects and inspires audiences. And we're delighted that the Family Sex Show will be on in May. I'm going to hand over to Josie, the artistic director of This Egg, to say a little more.
Hello, my name's Josie. I use she, her pronouns. I'm a white woman with dyed red hair, which is half up, half down today. I'm wearing gold hoop earrings, which are not real because I do not have my ears pierced. I run This Egg and I have been making and producing the Family Sex Show along with lots of other people over the last few years. If you're watching this video, then you might already have, or you might be thinking about buying some tickets to the show, or you might just be wondering why we thought making it was a good idea. Great question. We wanted to make something that came at the topic of relationships and sex in a light way, in a way that would open conversations, in a way that would encourage people to ask questions, and to allow for that space of vulnerability and not knowing and making mistakes. We hope that the show kind of adds to the more creative or alternative relationships and sex education that is out there at the moment in all different forms. And I guess we really wanted to make the show that we wish that we'd had when we were younger, and also part of our adult selves felt like or feels like they need now as well. And mostly, if we know our bodies, then we know our rights.
Hello, my name is Ailey. I'm programming and engagement manager at Tobacco Factory Theatres. I am a white female with brown blonde hair, and my pronouns are she, her. Family Sex Show is a fun and playful show for adults and children aged 5 and up. It offers an honest human sex education that is feminist, queer, non-binary, inclusive, and sex positive. This show can allow audiences of all ages to feel confident about their bodies, their boundaries, and their sexual health.
Yeah, like, I mean, it sounds like a great show for 16-year-olds. You know what I mean? Like, but not 5-year-olds. Like,
why do you want 5-year-olds?
Yeah, why do you want to do it in front of 5-year-olds? Why do you want to get naked in front of 5-year-olds? Why do you want to... I mean, well, I know why they want to talk about all this gender, queerness and all that sort of stuff. It's indoctrination into woke values. Nobody before, like... whenever non-binariness was invented as a thing, you know, we even knew about it. Like, you know, so obviously no 5-year-olds are going to be like, "Daddy, I'm non-binary," because it wasn't a thing. Now they're telling all these kids, "Oh, there's a thing called non-binary. You can be it." And also, they're also telling them, "Oh, and it's cool and it's fun and it's interesting. Oh, it's not like being cisgender and straight and all those horrible things." That's why 40%, they did a study, 40% of Generation Z kids identify as some kind of LGBTQ, like, because it's a nonsense now. It used to be a thing that, like you'd be gay, so you'd have sex, you know, if you're a man, you've sex with a man. Right. Now you can
back
just...
Back in my day, when you were gay, you'd be gay. These days...
yeah, these days, you can just be queer. You can just be queer, which is meaningless. There's comedians out there on the circuit who say that they're gender queer, but they've never had any same-sex experience. It's like, no, you haven't... You're not gay then. You can't. Why are you trying to put yourself in this LGBTQ thing to be cool when you haven't actually, you know, at the very least suck a dick? You know what I mean? That's all I'm asking. Just one. I'll let you suck my dick. You know what I mean? And then you can go on that acronym.
Are you going to say this to every other comedian you meet now? He says they're genderqueer. It's like, prove it.
But yeah, like, people just want to do it because it's the trend, it's the fashionable thing. But man, that's fine if it's the fashion, you know, go nuts.
Well,
go
it's fine when it's an adult doing it to themselves. But a non-binary 5-year-old is like a vegan dog.
Yeah, absolutely. Just leave the kids out of it, which seems like an obvious thing to say, but so much stuff with the left these days seems like an obvious thing to say. Just, it's fine for the grown-ups, but leave the kids out of it. Or, I mean, at least, or just use... old school paedophiles like Jimmy Savile. He didn't get any arts council grants. He did it.
Is that your message to the left? If you're going to be nonsense, at least don't take my taxpayer money.
Save money by employing, you know, they bring their own van. They've got a box of puppies. It's like, they didn't mention
any
puppies.
I'm a Thatcher.
There's no sweets. There's no puppies.
I'm for tax cuts against funding.
Yeah. Jesus. That's what I mean, as a you know, a right wing person, my key thing is that my taxes aren't getting spent on this. And yeah, it's ridiculous. You can't get a tattoo till you're 16. You know, you can't drive, you can't get a gun, all the rest of it. But for some reason, you can make lifelong changes to your body. You're equipped, you know, way beyond the age of consent to decide if you're, you know, non-binary or genderqueer or pansexual or all this sort of stuff. Man, nah, just stop putting it in the kids' heads. Like, you know, it's just, you know, and it's becoming this new class system where all the Ponzi Guardian reading parents in Bristol who think that they're doing the right thing by taking their kids to see this show, you know, then they'll have the dinner party one-upmanship, being like, "Oh, our Tarquin is, you know, genderqueer. Oh, our Esmeralda is transgender." It's like, nah, you're
creepy.
It's creepy. You're putting this stuff in their heads. Just leave it until they're old enough. Then it's fine. Then absolutely fine. Transition. Be genderqueer. Go to orgies. All of it, but just, you know, not just leave it away from the kids.
Well, on that note, I suppose we shall move to Rwanda. So,
let's move to Rwanda. I feel like moving to Rwanda.
I feel like going on holiday there just for a laugh. Why not? So,
but apparently, it's really nice.
It sounds like it. Mm. So, Rwanda is our new best friend in the UK. We're very much good friends with Rwanda now. Yeah. And the reason is because they have become progressive and tolerant, like we used to be, but no more. Because they have decided to put up a sign that says, "Refugees welcome." They're going to take all of our refugees. So let's start this off with Priti Patel. So I tweet this out. British flag, Rwandan flag, part of our new plan for immigration. And if you scroll down there, John, we just announced the UK-Rwanda Migration Partnership has been signed. So if you're looking for a holiday for Rwanda, I there's an easy way, or at least a free way you can do it, which is by becoming a sea people, one of the boat people who come over from France, a horrible, disgusting country, a constant war, and everyone has to flee there. So it gets on a boat and comes over to Britain. Now we're going to ship them to Rwanda instead of keeping them here. So if it goes to the next one, this is how I imagined this discussion going down. If you can click on that second image, just between the Rwandan side of this and Priti Patel being our Home Secretary, just no more friendship with France. And the reason for this being that we gave France loads of money to stop this, to stop the sea people, and the French went, thank you for the money, and they did nothing. So we're kind of mad.
Bear in mind, when they do that, they're putting lives at risk. I mean, the crossing the channel, it's like
pointless waste of life.
These people smugglers are making so much money from it, and it's so dangerous. You know, so these, you know, desperate people, and obviously people are desperate. They want to come to Britain because it's the best. You know what I mean? They don't want to stop in France.
It's like,
why have you gone all that way? Why are you only going halfway? Go to a fully free and prosperous country. You know what I mean?
Sorry, if we go to the next link, we can see the situation, because I want to hammer this down first, which is just for foreigners who might not know what we're even talking about.
That's one of the terrible vessels that they use for coming across. That's a P&O ferry.
Rickety.
Anyway. Staffed by people on £1.86 an hour.
So here's the situation. Some 297 crossed the channel in 2018. Last year, the figure was 28,526. In a handful of years, it went from a couple of hundreds to thousands upon thousands.
Yeah.
And is only set to completely increase if we do nothing, of course.
And once people are in the country, once you come to the UK, you know, even if your asylum application takes years to be processed.
But even if you're a piss taker, and it's obvious, and we say no, what is it, 90% of those just disappear?
Yeah, they just disappear. So, you know, they stay in the country and work under the
counter. In the black market.
Yeah. Well, one of my mates, Bernardo, he's actually been deported now, but he came back twice because
illegally.
Yeah,
that's the thing, it's easy to do.
Yeah,
it doesn't seem to be difficult at all.
And he was working, he only got caught because he got in a road rage incident. He was delivering flowers for was it Royal Bank of Scotland or something, and so he had a van and he was delivering flowers. So he got stopped in a road rage incident. He had no driver's license, no visa to be here. He was like,
even have insurance.
It was like nothing. He got sent straight back. And then I remember, because he was seeing my friend Emma as well, and she sent his, he had a PlayStation. I can't remember what year it would have been. But the PlayStation, so he's from Brazil. So she sent the PlayStation because he sold the PlayStation over there. They had a real shortage of them or something. So he sold it for loads of money. Like the equivalent of, like, you know, months of wages.
Well, anyway, I'm sure he's now enjoying the sun again, presumably. But to hammer it down further, which
he was a nice guy, though. He should be allowed to stay.
Well, if he applies legally, he'll be able to get it, presumably.
I think
28,500 of those who are here this year. Of them, the majority are young, single men, most of whom are just economic migrants, so have no right to be in the country more than literally Panjit. Just pick a guy on the world, and he has as much right as such people. I mean, the sea people in particular, those coming from France. It's even more of a joke because, of course, you're in France.
Yeah.
I mean, we joke about France being an asshole, and you know, some of it. But Calais, you'll be fine. You'll be able to live there as a refugee. You're not a North Korean in China, for example. The asylum system is costing Britain £1.5 billion a year to house these thousands and thousands of people, with £3.5 million a day to accommodate 25,000 migrants in hotels. And we have that here. I mean, just anywhere in this country I've been now, you know, where my parents are, where people in Reading are, where I used to live, or even here, you know where the hotels are, you know the people who are in it. I mean, there's one of the guys in the office said to me the other day, that he walks to work, and every day he walks past like three or four homeless English people, and you can see they're English, and then walks past this hotel down there, where you can see all the migrants, the sea people,
right,
who have no more right to be here than anyone else, and they're in a hotel.
Right.
It's naturally pissing a lot of people off.
That just shows the lack of ingenuity on the behalf of English people, because they could go to France and claim asylum.
They could get dinghies back.
While they're because the dinghies are only coming one day, so it's going to be cheaper on the way back. So they could go to France, claim asylum, live in a hotel in France.
I don't think the French are doing it. I think they've got a much harder policy on this because they've had too many piss takers.
Man, other countries, like, everybody's like, oh my God, the Tory party are so evil. They're so evil to immigrants and stuff. Man, we've got the weakest, laxest. Like, you know, my mate Bernardo was here for years and years and years. And, like, if you go, like, I remember trying to move to Canada. I looked into moving to Australia. It's all, like, point system. And it's difficult to get in. And Thailand, man, you can't own land. You can't buy, you can't own and buy property. You can only get a year's visa at the time. It's got to be renewed every year. You've got to check in with the government every 90 days.
One of our Gold Medal subscribers is currently there and just endlessly whining about just the nonsense the government does.
Yeah.
I mean, it is mad the way they treat foreigners. But, you know, we are opposite in the other direction. So if we go to the next one here, we can see the story as it's blown up, which is we're now offering one-way tickets to Rwanda for some UK asylum seekers. Mm. Thank Christ. Finally, frankly. They're quoting here, some asylum seekers who cross the channel to the UK will be given a one-way ticket to Rwanda under new government plans. The pilot scheme will focus on single men arriving on boats or lorries. Mm. So asylum seekers who apply for asylum legally will get it.
Mm.
That's fine. If you're not an asylum seeker, yeah, that's fine. What the route they came here legally, that's fine.
Yeah.
What's not fine is turning up in France and saying, nah, this isn't good enough. I've been rejected by the French for being a piss taker. Well, I'll just go to Britain and be a piss taker over there. New. Sod off to Rwanda. We'll process you over there as a deterrent.
Yeah, like what he said, but, you know, just sounded a bit less racist.
I know. The asylum seeker race. Like, that's what I love when people call it racist. It's like, which race specifically? Because literally every single race.
But it's, I mean, like, there's real safety issues with the, you know, people who come here legitimately tend not to come here and just get on something that floats and, you know, paying somebody thousands of pounds to get here. So, you know, there's dangers, especially when people are bringing kids or whatever on these things. Man, like, people can, you can get rough weather, the thing can capsize, people can die. That's serious. It happens. I mean, it happens a lot. Also, we need to make...
the last Darwin Award won by one of the individuals that did this. It was a migrant who got to France. I believe he was in Mali with a friend of his. And they were denied by the French because the French were like, you're obviously taking the piss.
Mm.
Like, you have no right to be here. Go back to Mali. We'll pay for the flights. And they went, no, not do that. They stole a dinghy, stole two metal shovels, and then tried to sail across, like, just row their way to England.
Good idea.
The metal shovel went through the dinghy, and one of them drowned.
Oh,
and then they tried to claim it was a child. It wasn't a child. He was in his 30s.
Right.
It's just like, right, yeah, that's a moron.
Yeah, still eligible for... One of my mates, Moses, he takes and he fosters... him and his wife foster refugee kids, and but they've got their own kids. And he took in a Syrian refugee kid, and the kid turns up, he's supposed to be like, you know, 14. Kid turns up, he's like... 20, 22, yeah. Something like that.
The whole system is broken.
Moses had to take him back because he's, you know, he's got a 14-year-old daughter. He can't have this, like, you know, guy, you know, in the house being a bit, yeah, anyway. But, yeah, so there's the fact that it's dangerous. You know, this thing that the Guardian, all the woke left think is wonderful, which is, you know, people coming across on boats, hugely dangerous. It's killing a lot of them. But also, you know, this will make Britain a less attractive. It'll put people off. It'll make it a less attractive destination for people.
That's the idea. It's not genuine.
We could also just put pictures of Britain up at Calais to show.
Hellscape.
Yeah. This is Swindon. Are you sure? There's still time to change your mind.
That would work. Go back to southern France.
Yeah. It's much Look at the sunnier. Cheese we have here. Look at the cheese you have in France.
If we go to the next one, we can see that the first glimpse of the hotels that are being set up there. Because again, you have to house them in hotels. So this is Hotel Rwanda. I love that movie. But this is the hotel they've picked here, which is the Hope Guest House. And as you can see, it's, well, Rwandan standards. It's nothing inhuman. But it is, well, we're going to house you in a hotel because, well, you're essentially homeless and insisting that you have asylum here and you came here illegally. We don't really trust you. And we've been through tens of thousands of you now. And every single time, or at least the vast majority we found, have just been taking the piss. So, no.
That looks really nice.
Completely run out of sympathy for anyone who thinks this is a terrible deal compared to what they get in the UK, which is three-star hotels, which is obviously nicer than this. The biggest complaint here being that there's only three showers to share, which is awful. You have to wait your turn. And if we go to the next one, we can see Nigel Farage's criticism of this. And this is the right-wing criticism I've seen that's relevant, which is him saying that it only takes two cases of journalists claiming that there's been abuse and the whole pilot scheme will collapse and then the government will be made to look foolish.
That's but there's abuse criticism. There's abuse in the UK.
Yeah, there's a lot of people being killed.
Look at the grooming gangs.
There's the one in Scotland. I think it was in Glasgow, Edinburgh. It's Glasgow, where one refugee just went out and started stabbing people.
Right.
Just bored. And the Guardian went with, refugee dies in stabbing because the police shot him to death. I'll show you.
Evil racist police.
Yeah, I'll show you.
Shot someone just because he was
stabbing innocent people to
exercising
death.
His God-given right to run around with a knife stabbing people.
Yeah, so that's the right-wing criticism, but the left response is the best one. Let's go to it, of course. So start off here, Guardian headline. UK asylum seeker sent to Rwanda. That takes punishment of fellow human beings to a next level. it's inhuman to send them to Rwanda. Because the next one we can see Diane Abbott decided to go with shipping asylum seekers 5,000 miles to Rwanda for processing is both cruel and bizarre. It's cruel. It's unbearable. How could you send human beings to Rwanda? It's not like there's only humans there. We move to the next one. We can see more responses from leftists here. The UK government plans to send asylum seekers and refugees to Rwanda. It's cruel and inhumane. They're just endless whining about how this is unbelievable. This is not the way to treat people.
Rwanda's a really nice country. Are they still thinking Rwanda's this like war-torn country with the Hutus and the Tutsis still going at each other?
Yeah, they still think everyone's chopping each other up with machetes. The left apparently gets their worldview from, well, memes.
Yeah, 25-year-old memes.
25-year-old memes. Like, completely out-of-date memes. If we move forward, we can see some more people who are stuck. And
Zara Sultana.
It is kind of cruel to pick on the mentally impaired. But she goes with, this is so disgusting, sickening, cruelty, even by their standards, of sending people to the horrible shores of Rwanda. I don't have any shores, don't know why I mentioned shores. If we move to the next one, of course, we can see more of this, which is Douglas Murray points out, yeah, by the way, both the EU and UN resettle people in Rwanda. So not many people seem to know that. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's been 25 years since the genocide.
Yeah.
It's doing fine.
And Douglas Murray has written an amazing book called The Strange Death of Europe, which is a very reasonable book.
Thought we'd done a book club on it. I can't remember.
I've seen it in here. Yeah. But
fantastic.
Yeah, fantastic book that's well worth reading.
Yeah, I'll go and check out our book club too. I'd love to see this.com. Anyway, go to the next one. We can see the complaints of this about it costing money, and this is bad. We're spending $1.5 billion to house these people in the UK.
Mm.
But this is leftist here decided to go with the fact that apparently Australians had the same situation, which is they then had to move them all to Papua New Guinea and, process them there. And it cost them $10 billion Australian dollary dues. So that's $1.7 million per person. Except, well, no, dummy. Because it went from huge numbers of people coming to no one.
That's the thing. It makes the country a less appealing destination because you know you're going to get sent to Rwanda. So then people stop. And there's a huge cost in processing them here. So this, in the long run, it's...
You save a lot of money.
Yeah.
I mean, if we go to the next one, you can see someone making this point about the numbers of people. And we're spending $1.5 billion. The pilot scheme for this is costing $120 million.
Yeah.
We're saving 90%. 90% of the money we're spending, we're going to save.
Yeah.
That's not a bad deal. That's a bloody great deal.
And also, you've got the unspoken thing is trying to accommodate people who are coming from, ideologies that are, pre-medieval and don't mesh easily with Western liberal society.
I'm going to get this wrong, but I think I calculated it. It was around about this. 25% of the terrorist attacks we've had in the last 10 years have all come from refugees.
Right.
Many of them from boat people.
Right.
Happens a lot because Allahu Akbar. Let's move to the next one because we can see the days of NHS spending calculated this. It's 3 days of NHS spending for this entire thing. If we were to spend $1.4 billion on it. Okay. That's we're spending $1.5 billion on our current system. So no, it's not going to cost that much.
Yeah.
Because the cost will immediately evaporate when people stop coming. And if we go to Rwanda, because
that,
of course...
That sounds quite a lot. The 3 days of NHS spending is... I mean, the NHS is huge.
Well, that's what we're currently spending.
Yeah.
But this is assuming that the numbers will be the same, which it won't.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's a front-loaded cost.
Bollocks. The left went with, it's sickening and disgusting to send human beings to Rwanda. How dare you?
That's racist against Rwanda.
Yeah, the Rwandans weren't too pleased about that.
Yeah, I bet they weren't.
If we go to the next one, we can see their response about all this. See Colin Brazier mentioning that it's a peaceful, stable, relatively prosperous nation. The hell's wrong with you? What's wrong with Rwanda? If we go to the next one.
I was on Colin's show the other week.
Colin's a good guy.
Yeah.
And this is Rwandan news I found, where they're just praising the deal, just being like, this is great. Like, we're going to get paid a boatload of cash, and all we have to do is house these people in hotels, and if they're, BS people, we just ship them back.
Yeah.
And the British pay for it.
And also, if they're legitimate asylum seekers, then they get to come.
Yeah. It's just like, well, this is a great deal for everyone. The Rwandans are just sat around, apparently, just being like, yeah, what's the problem? Why do you like Rwanda?
Yeah.
Like, this is fine. I don't know what's the matter with you people. We're not living 25 years ago. And if you guess the next one, we have the Rwandan government who gave some statement in which they're just like, yeah, we welcome the partnership. It's great. Everyone makes money. Everyone's better off. The real asylum seekers get the real asylum. The fake ones get kicked out. It's just great for everyone. It stops the, people smugglers. It helps everyone, in fact. If we go to the next one, though, there is one party in Rwanda that was upset. I have to include this because it's hilarious. So you can see the Guardian went with, opposition criticized the deal. Oh, what did they say? They asked one party who has no MPs, so don't care. They did ask the Green Party, though. The Green Party of Rwanda, what do they have to say? Rwanda has already a high population density, and already land is not sufficient for all of us, which I love because it's the Australian response. If we go to the next one, I don't know if you can click on the second image there. It's just the Australian, well, the Rwandan version of this. That's the Rwandan Green Party. The Green Party's position is no more foreigners. Refugees not welcome.
Yeah, because it's funny, all the woke lefties hear their arguments in favour of, you know, because the UK has incredibly high levels of immigration. We have net migration. I think in 2021 it was, or 2020 it was 715,000. That's the official figure. So, you know, realistically, including unofficial people, we're looking at over a million, which is, you know, an enormous amount of immigration. And obviously immigration brings a lot of benefits, but the benefits tend to be concentrated in the wealthy people who, you know, property prices go up because there's more competition for housing. You get cheaper nannies, cheaper, you know, people doing, you know, the menial tasks that, you know, people are brought into the country to do. Instead of, you know, rebalance the economy so you know, working people get a better wage. But if you're a working class person, if you're a builder, you know, all of a sudden you're competing against
If you're young and looking for a cheap job, too bad.
Yeah, yeah. If you've got, you know, a mortgage and a family and cars and all the rest of it to support, man, you can't compete against, you know, three guys who can share a room and they're sending money back home. So, you know, it's not the solution. Obviously, a certain amount of immigration is necessary and helpful and useful to society.
We're not even at this
mass immigration, and to have,
we're not even at the stage of talking about legal immigration though. This is purely about,
this is purely
people who are just taking the piss.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, fighting age young men from, you know, ideologies that, you know, are slightly.
If we go to the next one, we can see also, because we covered this when it first came out, which is the Danish government were actually the ones initially to set up this negotiation. Mm. And the Danish government is working with us because, well, we're doing it as a joint thing. And they came up with the idea, and the British were like, hey, can we get in on this? And then we've taken over the process, it seems, which is neat. But also, it's very misogynistic to say Rwanda's a terrible place.
Yeah.
Don't you know there are feminists? All of them are feminists. They have the most feminist government around.
Do they?
I'm not even joking. Let's go to the next link. Let's just go to their website for their parliament here. 61% of MPs are women.
Oh my god!
Ridiculously high. The highest in the world.
I'm going to go to Rwanda.
All the women in parliament. You might wonder how that happened. If we go to the next one.
Imagine if they all get in sync.
Yeah, but we joke about identity politics, and if you want to see a real world, you know, example of them trying this, well, here you have it, in which they have basically a one-party state because, well, in partly because of this, because 24 of the seats in the parliament are made for women.
Yeah.
As in, you're a woman, be an MP. Like, just there to represent women. That is your whole purpose. And the argument being, the reason they put this in the constitution, I read, was that they decided that it was mostly men that caused the genocide 25 years ago.
Good
Therefore,
point.
Women in the parliament, no more genocide.
Well, has there been a genocide since?
No.
It's working!
The system works.
We need to do that here, in case we have genocide.
Yeah, if we go to the next one, I don't know if you this is the constitution, I won't go through it, but it's just in here. They mentioned that 24 seats have to be women, made by the electoral college, which I just find hilarious. That's the constitution, because what a show. If we go to the next one, there's also a story here in which the Guardian are very mad. So Omar here, an asylum seeker, he's absolutely gutted that he's going to find out what Rwandan hospitality is like. And I was going to go through his long story.
So he's upset that he's been sent to Rwanda instead.
Yeah, he's very
upset.
He's
going to be safe.
It's going to be fine. But here's the thing as well. Like, he gives us this big long story about his life, how he got here. And it's so, like, not justifying what he's done, because he's so typical. He's a man who's decided to come to the UK because he speaks English and he says he's got family here. Except that, you know, that's, of course, something to be disputed until it's proven. However, he travelled through pretty much every safe country on Earth before he got here. The only thing that accepts him from the average person of the sea people is that he came from Afghanistan. And when actually polled, I remember because they did a video on this, 50% of those who come across from the sea people are Iranian.
Right.
Not even fleeing a war.
Right.
Like, okay, well, you're not all gay.
Yeah.
Like, come on. In which case, you could have stopped off anywhere else along the way.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So it's, again, just nonsense.
And a lot of people convert to Christianity when they get to the UK.
Yeah.
Because then they can say, well, I can't be sent back to wherever that is because they persecute Christians.
But also, I've left Islam, so I'd be killed.
Yeah,
so I've got
to stay
here now.
Yeah.
Convenient timing to convert and believe in Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Although, you may wonder why I get so mad about this.
Why do you get so mad about this?
Well, I've got a good reason, which is that I've, well, if we go to the next one, this is an interview we did, and I'm going to plug this, Supreme Video on Lotus here, an interview with Ji-Yun Park, and she's a North Korean defector who then got refugee status after her story and ended up in the UK.
Yeah.
And could not be more legitimate.
Yeah.
And we've mentioned this a million times. I've got a thing of a fetish with looking at the horror that is North Korea. And you go through story after story from defector, and you're just sat there reading it, being like, you know, I hope on the next page they make it to South Korea. I hope they're safe.
Mm.
Because, you know, if they get deported from China, they go back to North Korea into a concentration camp.
Yeah.
That's a refugee.
Yeah.
Not someone who's in France, and if they get found out, they get told, please go home. By the way, we won't check up on you.
Mm.
Like, no. These people are not legitimate when they're taking up spaces for genuine people
yeah.
who are in absolute hell.
Yeah.
Frankly.
And also sort of smearing the genuine refugees as, you know, makes everybody suspicious of genuine refugees because they're like, well... Is he really a refugee?
I mean, it used to be a given. If you go back and watch the debates of like the 2000s about this, people would always say, well, refugees, of course, because that's fine.
Yeah.
There wasn't a question
yeah.
that refugees would ever be illegitimate.
Yeah.
Whereas in the modern day, they so often are because of the way our system works. The fact
and there's an industry grown up around it of lawyers and people who represent them, you know, and all these like lengthy appeals processes which drag on for years. They get taxpayers' money to do that.
Yeah.
And they all read The Guardian.
But anyway, that's my personal hatred for this circumstance and why I'm so bitter about it.
Yeah.
I'd also like to mention, if you go to the next one here, Ji-Yun Park has now published a book. I haven't been able to give it a read, but if you would, if you enjoyed the interview and like to know more about her life,
yeah.
well, there you are. You can go give that a read.
So that's an evil right-wing person promoting the book of a female refugee from North Korea.
Yeah, she's actually a member of the Conservatives as well. She's run as a councillor. She's
right.
running again in this election, so if you're voting in, I believe it was Bury, I might have that wrong.
Yeah.
If you're voting in that constituency, you have to vote for her.
Yeah.
Well. No one else. Otherwise, that's it. That's the Rwandan solution to our sea people problem, which is if you're legitimate, you'll come back. If you're not,
yeah. Hey, if it's good enough for the EU, which according to a lot of the flags and the blue tick people on Twitter, the EU is a good thing. Mm-hmm. So if it's good enough for the EU, surely it's good enough for the UK.
Good enough for the EU, good enough for Denmark, good enough for the UN.
Yeah.
They'll be fine. It's not inhumane in the slightest.
Anyway, and we support genuine refugees.
I support Rwanda. Let's go to the video comments.
Hello there, Leo. I hope you can understand me okay. I'm still practicing my Scottish. I'm actually from Clan Macmillan on my dad's side, though I never learned the language. Anyways, I want to say I'm really glad that you joined up with the team. You're the definition of color commentary and endlessly amusing, and I really appreciate it. I just got one critique, if you don't mind.
I do
Could
mind.
You do your segments about things that aren't okay. yourself? It's just not interesting to me, personally. Anyway, speaking of my dad, he's got this knife, you see. It's so big, it's banned in the UK.
Fuck.
A knife up your ass, you fucking...
Don't sweat.
Man, he says... So he says I do stuff about myself. I was talking about, what was it today? The, like, lefty nonce theatre. Naked sexual.
You do segments sometimes
stuff.
About stuff on Twitter.
Yeah, I do stuff about myself sometimes when it's some that's like of national importance. The Victoria Corrin thing. So the thing that was on that I did last time. Oh, I can't help it if my life's more interesting than yours. You fake American Scottish Brit. I hate Americans. They're like, if you go back, like, man, I'm Scottish.
About Chad, Dad? He's anyway, a lovely guy.
Well, he's not a lovely guy right now. He's criticizing me. Like, the Victoria Corrin issue, it was reported widely in the newspapers. It was on TV. But it's not really about me. It's a wider issue, which is wokists smearing people as racist. And they use that to minimize and basically erase right-wing voices to get us banned from comedy. It's happened to me. It's happened to me before. I'm with Simon Ferdows from the Live Comedy Association called me racist. Victoria Corrin calls me racist, so it's about more than just me. Also, it's a popular video, over 100,000 views. I did one about it as well. That's got another like 80,000 views. So you know, I don't think it's a nonsensical thing to talk about.
Chad Dad said he didn't enjoy it. That was
well,
all.
Chad Dad, you can watch something else. And next time you got a critique from me, why don't you write it down on a bit of paper and shove it up your arse and. Can I swear more?
No.
Well, I'm not allowed to swear more. But...
The mildest type of criticism. You got really
Yeah, I don't like any...
That.
The mildest criticism is the worst kind because you're not even allowed to just go off on one other person. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, mild criticism. What, I'm in school now? Don't like the thing about the... Man, you know what I mean? You can watch anything on the internet. You've got the internet. Okay, you go, when I'm on, you can go and like play Tetris.
I suppose we'll move to the next one.
Some recent Darker Lotus Eaters podcasts have raised the subject of the death penalty. Now, if you think there's such a thing as a civilized method of killing, then you're almost certainly wrong. Heads cut off by the guillotine were able to be roused up to 2 minutes after execution by shouting the condemned's name. In hanging, the head is shrouded for the same reason. The neck is broken, but the brain not killed. BBC's Horizon in 2008 saw Michael Portillo study the issue in case the death penalty should be legalized in Britain. He settled on hypoxia, which was painless and guaranteed results.
That's interesting, yeah.
That's pretty cool. I don't know what to say about that.
Yeah. And did the shrouding the head during hangings, is that like a new development? Because I'm sure in the old days they used to hang them so you could see the face. Because it was a huge spectator sport. People would get picnics and stuff and go and watch the hanging, yell abuse at the people as they're led up to the thing. Even though it was like quite often for pretty minor stuff, like coming up with a policy involving Rwanda or stealing bread or whatever.
I'm trying to remember. I have no idea when it changed. Because it's weird, isn't it? Because it's sort of an admission that this is a bit improper.
Yeah.
Because...
And then they stopped being public as well. Yeah. So, you know, the last hangings in the West weren't...
You've been to Oxford Castle?
No.
So they have... they used to do hangings outside on a raised platform for the audience to see. But then people started stealing bits of clothes and it got a bit manic. So then they had to move the hangings onto the top of the castle so that people couldn't steal bits of the deceased.
Like Beatlemania? Or were they actually...
I got a bit of his trousers. Like...
Right. So... No way.
Yeah. People did used to enjoy it. Let's go to the next one.
Yeah.
If you'd like, I could do a quick review on some of my favorite textbooks that I used while homeschooling through the middle and higher grades and stuff. I think that homeschooling is an amazing thing for a child to have, and it's not necessarily expensive. It's more that you have to change to a single-income family as one parent stays at home to educate their children.
This is interesting. I was thinking, because I'm having a baby, and I was thinking about homeschooling, because I don't want my kid to be like groomed by green-haired genderqueers. But I mean, the great thing about being a comedian is like most of your work is in the evening. So like my wife is does legal stuff. And
you could actually teach him stuff.
I could stay at home during the day and do the baby stuff. Although then I was thinking, because like we're having a girl and I want a boy, so if I send the kid to state school, it's going to get all this genderqueer stuff is going to get indoctrinated, and then she'll decide to transition, and then I'll have the son that I want.
I feel like a better solution might be to just keep trying, Leo. I feel like it'd be more fun as well.
Yeah. Maybe I'll do that.
Let's go to the next one.
So here's a 30-second book review of Gaz Kolthraka, Prophet of the Wa, by Nate Crowley. This is definitely an orc book, probably even better than Brutal Cunning, because there's less Admech and more just orcs. The book is told mostly through flashbacks, as Gaz Kol's personal grot is interrogated by a member of the Inquisition to learn more about him. Yeah, you get to learn a lot about the orc's way of life. It is just as hilarious as you think it is. The book is about 8 hours instead of the usual 12 to 14, so a bit shorter. I'd give it a solid 8.5 out of 10. If you like orcs, you will like this book.
Maybe I should do a book club on some of these things. I got a bit of an obsession with orcs. I don't know, you don't know anything about 40K, right?
No.
Okay, so the orcs are a race in there who are the most funny race of all, because they have, they're really stupid, but they just have instincts that guide them, and it leads them to living their lives in the most sort of brain dead but also likable way possible. Like, they just love war, so that's why they're obsessed with war, and they just do it for fun. There's no purpose whatsoever, but they're horrific because there'll be hordes and hordes of them that'll come over the hills and just slaughter everything. And even if they lose, they're just like, well, still had fun, so didn't lose.
Sounds like Russia.
there are some comparisons to their tactics there, but I'll have to send you a video about them sometime, because it's just the way they think about things, like, it makes you laugh, if nothing else.
I love that Russia's that massive ship, the Moskva, named after Moscow.
A flagship, isn't it? It's gone.
Yeah, flagship in the Black Sea. One of only three of that class of, you know, proper big ship in the Russian Navy, to use the technical term. It's sunk by Ukraine. It's amazing. I'm on the Telegram channels where, you know, people post all the footage and all the rest of it. And it's full of, like, you know, Russian. Like, basically, you've got these nerdy Western kids who are, like, pro-Putin because they don't know who their dad is. So they're desperate for some sort of male figure in their life, even though Putin's, like, this bloated, fat, weak old guy. The others, like, you know, actual Russian people who are, like, pro. It's, oh, it's just, I've been really enjoying. Just, like, I've been masturbating constantly to their tears. It's absolutely fantastic. I love it. So yeah, I hope
you send me some of these telegrams.
I just want all my taxes. I just want spent on weapons for Ukraine, so they can sink Russian ships.
I think that is at least a better spending than on a family sex show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get the next one.
Well, if it isn't Sussy Jack.
Bro, are you high?
Let me check. Yes. High on American spirit.
That's a nice argument. Why don't you back it up with a source?
My source is that I made it the f*** up. Check the internet lately.
Raiden, hop on Twitter. You need to see this.
I hate this website.
It's all f***ing weeb s***, Raiden. It doesn't make any sense. And I'm being distracted with other nonsense.
And that's just the beginning. Imagine a world free of cancel culture, where no one can call me out for my outlandish claims. A world where I can say the N-word.
I love the PragerU logo. That's great.
Jeez.
Good meme.
Yeah.
High quality meme. Let's get the next one.
Well, here's a bit of nostalgia. My first mechanical suit from back in 2018. If Elon was working on Iron Man suits instead of SpaceX, maybe it would have given me a big old cup of money. And it wouldn't have taken me so long to make my power armor.
Oh.
But you know, it doesn't do well to focus on what could have been. Focus on what is, and how you can make it work to your advantage.
I love the little boxing gloves in the end.
Yeah, gotta keep it safe.
Yeah, that stuff's wicked though. Like, when I was a kid, I would have lost my mind seeing that.
Oh, that's a question, actually. I wonder, like, do you just keep it to yourself, like, in your garage, and then you have fun with it, or...?
I think I went and actually Googled him, and I think it goes to, like, you know, events and stuff like that, like, you know, Village Fates or whatever, the equivalent of what that is in America, and has the displays. And I can't remember if he goes into schools as well, but, like, that, man, that is something that should go, get kids interested in mechanics and engineering and all that kind of stuff, and it's just cool. It's way better than sending in, like, lefty groomers.
Yes, that's sending Drag Cream Story Hour or Engineering Mecha Man.
Yeah.
Go to the next one.
Tony D and Little Joan with another Legend of the Pines. From Weird New Jersey Magazine comes the story of the Atlantic City atomic bombs. In July of 1957, the Air Force was moving atomic bombs in this plane when it lost two engines and the crew was forced to jettison weight. They dropped two atomic bombs without their cores into the ocean off the coast of Atlantic City. They landed the plane safe, but the bombs were never recovered.
Yeah. I mean, I do wonder sometimes if they were and just they don't tell anyone, but... Because the other horrific thing about the missing bombs, I think it's Lemino made a great video about this, is the Soviet Union claims that they never lost any.
Right.
Just like, that's obviously not true.
Yeah, yeah.
In the slightest.
Yeah.
The Americans say they've lost like 20 or something, and then up till 1994, which they just don't tell you how many they've lost since.
Right.
Fantastic.
How did they lose them?
It's just accidents, so when you're transporting them, is usually the most popular one.
Right.
The other one, I think it was a submarine that sunk, so then they fired the torpedoes to get rid of them. They just couldn't find them again. They're just gone. Fantastic. So there's just nuclear bombs all over the world. Most of them in the ocean. No one knows where they are.
So I guess they'll corrode through eventually and then there'll be that radiation. But I guess it's actually not, you know, people overblow the impact of radiation.
Yeah, it's not really a problem when it's in the ocean because there's just way too much water.
Yeah.
So it's not that much of an issue. The worry is that it might just explode one day and cause a bit of a disturbance.
Right.
But the lucky thing there, if it's deep enough again, it doesn't cause that much.
Yeah, yeah.
There's some wonderful simulations of, like, what if you dropped bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki in the Mariana Trench?
Yeah.
Blew them up, and on the surface, it's just nothing.
Right, yeah, yeah.
It's just too much water.
Yeah.
Sorry, just go check out Lemino's video on that. Minimizes the reality of black and brown students. Black and brown are capitalized.
Don't care.
But also, it's in...
Wow, that's a lot of words. Too bad I'm not reading them.
I did feel that way having to read them. Every time, because it was some lady just giving her, oh, this is my experience of yesterday. And it's just like, it's a block of text. Cut it down, woman. It's just unbearable. Anyway, let's go to the written comments on the site. So yeah. We'll start off with Alex Ogle. Well, that was an unfortunate video overrun with Chad Dad appearing immediately after the Bristolian nonsense. I think clarification is in order. Apparently, Chad Dad's video comment came up right after the end of the nonce video. So just transitions.
Yeah.
So on to Elon Salt Mining Incorporated. Shaker Silver says, even if Twitter is owned by Musk, how much actual influence could this have to populist discourse online? I think it would incredibly help on that question first, because he's going to change the parameters in which the company works to stop censoring anything that is anti-progressive.
Mm.
And so you will end up with a lot more people on there who are just... as time goes on, the thing I'm interested in is whether or not he'll change the way they ban people. Because if you get banned now, you're banned for life.
Mm.
You're just gone. Million years.
Yeah.
The hell? Like, why is it not a year?
Yeah.
I mean, like, you give people prison sentences and they can't be more than 70 or whatever.
Yeah.
So I'd like to see him change that, because I'd like to see all the people who have been banned in the past back on.
Yeah.
And if they call for the death of someone and they get kicked off again, okay, fine. Yeah. But then 2 years later, they're back on again.
You could always do a ratcheting thing, so it doubles every time. So start with a day, 2 days, and then it quickly gets into, you know, unbelievable lengths.
Yeah. I'm always worried about this idea that you ban someone for life from your platform. And this doesn't just go for Twitter. It's everyone, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
I can understand why, because it's simpler to deal with, but it's inhuman.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. And you're removing people from, you know, the public square.
Yeah, you've exactly killed them.
Yeah.
Forever.
Yeah.
So while Meta, Google, Apple, and Microsoft are all larger, Twitter seems to have an inordinate political importance due to how much it's used for political messaging and organizing. Well, that's that second point is definitely true. The political messaging, I don't think people care that much about what's on Twitter, but learning about what's going on. But it's the MPs, the organizers, holy crap, they're all there.
Mm.
And holy crap, do they care about what's said on there for some reason.
Mm.
Like, you meet conservative MPs who are worried about saying that trans women are not women.
Yeah, because you can get banned.
Yeah, but they're worried about it in their day-to-day lives because they think that everyone's on their seats about upset about this. And it's like, they're not.
Yeah, it's just Twitter.
It's a different world.
Yeah. But it is mad. You can get banned from Twitter for stating biological fact.
Okay,
but...
dude, as Zuby said.
Yeah.
Remember that? I don't know if you know Zuby, but he responded to someone just saying, okay, dude.
Right, yeah.
And they banned him for that.
Right.
It's not like he's got on a shirt now. It's great.
Right.
Alex L. says, what if Musk is playing 4D chess and is actually doing this to bring spotlight on all the massive stakeholders in Twitter, such as Vanguard, BlackRock, and the Saudi Kingdom, to name a few?
Interesting.
He can't lose. I mean, he's already won in that regard. So I think it's a great move from him. I mean, what? Even if he loses some money, what is it, like $1 billion?
Yeah.
A 200th of your wealth?
Yeah.
Oh dear. I'm Elon Musk. What do I care? Binary Surfer says, this is a win-win situation for the right. They collude openly against Elon, block him. The right should learn that playing the game to recapture the institutions cannot work, even if a billionaire is helming the attempt. What is left is to work outside the system or burn it the F down. Learning this lesson having this data is a clear win for us. If he takes over, also a win. Smart fella. It's very true, Binary. Jonathan Crow says, I hope these idiots invest loads into Twitter and then Elon burns Twitter and their investment tanks and they lose billions. Should we move on to the Bristol?
The nonce show, so Chad Dad says, I'm sorry, Leo, for saying that. I love hearing about your life and I love your voice.
No, he didn't.
So thank you, Chad Dad. I humbly accept your apology and I hope you enjoyed your meal, whatever you're cooking in your kitchen. Maria Manzi says, the Bristol Family Sex Show, fetch the wood chipper. Good solution. George Happ says, normally I consider that play the usual leftist degeneracy, but the creators actively wanting children 5 and up confirms their groomer status. In a non-clown world, this would be an op to root out parents who abuse their children by taking them to this. That's a good point. It's a trap. You get there, if you brought your kids, it's like, whoa, why brought your kids to this? Small L Libertarian, although he's written it with a large L when he actually writes it, says, my twin girls turned 6 today in an attempt to show me how grown up they are, and after a lot of junk food, one of them shat themselves 30 minutes ago. Yep, definitely feel like they're ready for the birds and the bees talk. That's great. Omar Awad says, secondary to child rape, I think the most devious part of grooming efforts is convincing normal people that it isn't grooming at all, and thus allowing it to continue and proliferate. And this is what's happened before. Like, lots of parents, you know, defended the Catholic Church, and, you know, minimized what the victims had said. A lot more harm is going to be done before the pendulum starts swinging back the right way, and I only pray it happens before a truly violent backlash is warranted. Sophie Liv Peterson says, the thing about theatre is that nonsense people always think they're being artsy just because they're naked in the show. It's totally true. Like, there's so much of that in plays.
What's the one where they brought some farm animals into London because, oh, look, farm animals, that's weird.
Yeah.
And there were some naked women hanging around the goats, and they're like, yeah, this is art.
Yeah. Yeah, and going, like, man, I've been going to the Fringe for a year, Edinburgh Fringe for years, and it's full of that stuff. Kevin Fox says, I only have one question about the family sex show. Does it feature the dildo monkey? If it doesn't, then I'm not going to see it. I'm not going to see it anyway, but even less so if dildo monkey isn't appearing.
Do you remember the dildo monkey?
I remember the dildo monkey man, yeah, with his naked red butt went into a children's library to teach them about, dildos and red butts.
And the Labour Party were like, that's our guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then there was a backlash because he had a big dildo hanging off the front of his monkey suit. And people were like, this isn't appropriate for children. And they were like, oh, yeah, okay. Oh, we didn't think you'd see it that way.
I love the Labour Party trying to backtrack on that, though. They were like, we had no idea the dildo monkey was inappropriate. You did? You how?
Yeah.
On what planet?
But it is the party behind the Iraq War. So, you know, morality isn't their strong point.
Anyway, we'll end on the dinghy surfers. So Kenneth Perrin says, glad the Conservatives are doing something they said they would. Well done for Priti Patel for sticking to her guns. Fair enough, to be honest, yeah. I remember when we first covered this story, we all laughed at it because it was just like, oh, that's funny. It'd be really funny if they do it. They did it. Yeah. Apparently they tried with Ghana and Albania and there were legal problems, so the Rwandans were more accepting of refugees. How progressive. Sheep83 says, looking forward to seeing how the 95% Christian black ethno-stake of Rwanda adopts to some of the cultural enrichment. Diversity is good, right? Yeah, we laughed yesterday, me and Carl. I love the idea that one of them turns up and says, can we build a mosque? And just the Rwandans are going to look at them and laugh and go, say that again. Omar Awad says, I haven't read the article, but I preemptively disavow all of the Omars in the comments. Hashtag not all Omars. Yeah, I presume, Omar, you weren't writing for The Guardian in that particular section. But otherwise, we're basically out of time, so we'll end it here. So if you want more from us, of course, loadseers.com. Please do subscribe to get access to all the premium content and help support the show. For those of you who are, thank you very much. Where would they find you?
I'm on YouTube. I do videos. Sometimes they're about myself. So Chad Dad, you might not want to subscribe to that one. But yeah, I'm on Twitter as well. Even more now that I think Elon might be taking it over. But yeah, YouTube is the best place to get me.
Fair enough. All right. Otherwise, we'll be back Monday. Yeah. I always forget what day it is. We'll be back Monday, 1 o'clock. Thank you. Yeah. Goodbye.
Bye.